Sonic Outcasts, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter Retro Series continues with Mortal Kombat Legacy 2. Per usual, detailed plot spoilers and harsh language. Listener discretion is advised. As you know, folks, we're coming down to the wire with Mortal Kombat Street Fighter week, month, retro, you name it. We tackled Paul Anderson's Mortal Kombat, we tackled Annihilation, now we're getting into the good stuff, Legacy. Last week we discussed Legacy 1, this week we're discussing the second season of Legacy. Now, I don't know when the third season's coming around, and this is what drives me up the friggin' wall, because just when a series gets good, like Conquest, well, you know the drill, it's a cliffhanger. But unlike Conquest, I don't think Legacy is being canceled, it's just taking its time. According to the interweb, it should be out sometime in 2015. And we got probably one of the most interesting cliffhangers next to Conquest, but we'll get there when we get there. I guess the first thing is that the first season discussed the characters. Now we're going to get into the tournament itself.
Yay! Tournament!
What to kill everybody.
So I guess the first thing we should talk about are these first two episodes that deal with Liu Kang. Here, it's a different actor altogether. Better or worse, do you think?
I adore him. The new actor is perfect. I love the way that they took Liu Kang's story in this one.
Now, this one,
the darkness of it.
Okay, this is Brian T., I believe, who is Liu Kang. I am not too familiar with him other than Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. I have not seen it, but I've heard of it. So I don't know what your thoughts are. Have you seen the Fast and Furious movies?
Yes, he was good in he was good in Tokyo Drift.
Okay, so you're familiar with this actor then?
Yes.
Okay. This was a different Liu Kang. I guess we should get first things first into the story. I was a little bit confused because is this another tournament altogether? Because we know that Liu Kang supposedly won the tournament if you played him in the video game. In the original movie, he won the tournament. Here, I don't know if there's supposed to be continuity from the movie series, or is this a totally different story?
Yeah, but you gotta look at it a different way, too, because if you're someone who played the games and you actually watched the movies, regardless, it can't really, I mean, it pulls from them, so it pays homage to them, but it doesn't really keep with their canon versus opening it up to a new canon, so they almost bring it to a more modern age than the games or even the movies ever did.
I was just a little bit confused because here was, and we'll get into it, with Liu Kang's story, he is now in America, he's working in a diner, and the owner of the diner's daughter is dating Liu Kang, and I guess he's about to pop the question. He's also a fan of the song Relax from, of course, yes. Well, the last time I heard that song was, of course, in Zoolander. Kill the Prime Minister! Yeah, well, that's a guilty pleasure. We're going to be talking about Zoolander, I'm sure of it. I'm sure that's going to be on our list. That was a great pick-me-up, though, if you know what I mean. But here we get a flashback where gangsters come in, rob the diner, and we know that they've killed Liu Kang's girlfriend. We get this quick transition where Liu Kang has con. I'm assuming he goes back to the Temple of Light. And that's what it looks like.
Right. You're getting ahead.
I am?
You are.
What did I miss?
In 2, the way that it starts is you see how Liu Kang and Kung Lao are now. you don't get to find out really how they morph that until the flashback later into.
Oh, that's right. You know, it's been a week since I've seen the season two.
Well, shame on you.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry. Okay, so why don't you tell me about episode one then? Because I was
episode one. You open in a bar, and it's a karaoke bar. The song comes on. I mean, and it places all the keynotes that you'll find out later in a future episode. But you basically meet Liu Kang, who looks like a drowned house rat, who looks like, you know, he is just at the end of his rope. He doesn't care anymore about life. He is the complete opposite of anything that they've brought to the table for Liu Kang. And then he's almost out for danger. One of the guys comes in, you know, there's a big old group of people that want to do karaoke, and they start singing Frankie Goes to Hollywood?
Yeah, it's Frankie Goes to Hollywood, yes.
Well, he starts doing the karaoke to that song, and, you know, living it up as only people who drink can. And Kung Lao, or not Kung Lao, but Liu Kang starts to get upset, and he's like, not that song. And basically gets into a fight just for, you know, for whatever reason. He wants to play with it, so whatever. And that's when you meet Kung Lao. Kung Lao comes in at the very end of that, and they start to talk about what had happened previously and how he had left the Temple of Light and how, you know, it was his choice. And, I mean, that's how you meet these two. You meet Kung Lao, who looks like he stepped off of Avatar, and you meet Liu Kang, who just looks like, you know, this gritty street fighter.
Well, let's talk about Kung Lao for a minute, because he, of course, is supposed to be the most important character in the Mortal Kombat universe. For some people, it's just a guy who wears the hat who can decapitate people, or slice them in two, or Mortal Kombat X, throws it on the ground, treats it like a buzzsaw, and pushes your head towards it. That's his new fatality right now in the game.
Sure.
But Liu Kang, as we know, he is a former, I want to make sure I got this right, Shaolin monk. That's the way to pronounce it, correct?
Right.
Okay. He is a former Shaolin monk. He was the member of the White Lotus Society. And, of course, he is the ancestor of the original Kung Lao. Correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, in this time, and by this time I mean the 21st century, or at least in the 90s, the 20th century, he is best friends with Liu Kang, because this is supposed to be the man whose ancestor was originally in the original tournament. Or at least the tournament of, yeah. And I believe Kung Lao was defeated by Shang Tsung right before Goro became champion for 500 years.
Right.
Okay. That's the whole thing with Liu Kang. So we're not, and Liu Kang and Kung Lao, we're not meeting the actual Liu Kang, Kung Lao. Okay, we're not meeting the actual Kung Lao. We're just meeting the ancestor. If I understand this correctly, then.
Right.
Okay. So, my question would be then, if this is such an important character, why was he not in the movie then? Why did they just, you know, like, throw in Nightwolf and they just, because you figure if they're going to take people and put people in, why was his character not discussed until now?
Popularity.
No, I don't even think it's that. I think that they took the easy route out.
I agree with that.
I mean, yes, it probably had a lot to do with popularity, because who wants to, you know, follow a stringent guy who, you know, is all good and, you know, all that? Look at a lot of the ways people treat most subjects today. I mean, there wasn't a lot of popularity to push behind him, but I think it was that they wanted to take the easy road out. They didn't want to delve into that type of a concept or go into that deep of a story and risk confusing people who may not be able to follow the storyline.
I'm just saying that if Kung, I agree with you. I'm just always going to go around and around and around and say to myself, this was supposed to be a character that should have been, well, he's in the second video game. I'm still confused to this day why they didn't want to put him in the movie. I'm sure he's somewhere in Conquest. I believe he has an important part in Conquest. I have to sit down, bought all the episodes. That's going to be a beast on itself, I'm sure, when we start talking about that next week. But I just go back and forth and say I don't understand. But I do remember now with the karaoke, I kept thinking the karaoke was episode 2.
Right.
not episode 1. I'm mixing episodes 1 and 2 around for some bizarre reason. But I do remember, yeah, an episode, in the episode you're talking about, you do have the gangsters at the bar, and Liu Kang is drunk, and he doesn't want to hear the karaoke song, and the two talk, of course. This one is a much grittier, defeated Liu Kang. This is somebody right. who... The thing about part twos is that the stakes are higher, and the heroes are more defeated. They don't know where they're going, they're on a soul search, and they seem to either need that Obi-Wan Kenobi or that Yoda. And I guess in the Mortal Kombat universe, Raiden would be the Obi-Wan. I don't know if Kung Lao would be the Yoda, but he is spiritual. He's not really using his... Well, he's not using his hat as a weapon unless he needs to.
Right.
No,
Kung
Lao is the Qui-Gon Jinn of the Mortal Kombat universe.
So...
Basically, there is Fujin... from the game, it was basically Mace Windu.
Alright, boys, yes. We're going to be doing Star Wars later, but goodness gracious.
Well, this is what we grew up with, you know.
Yeah,
but, yeah, I mean, the fight sequences in the bar are interesting. They're well choreographed, once again. It's not just a bunch of people beating the crap out of each other, and it's not just about the cursing and the gore.
Right.
Also, Liu Kang, what I also enjoy about this, even though he's won the tournament... He's not training the way he used to. He's going back to what he did, I guess, in the Paul Anderson movies, where he's become Americanized again. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, it's not... Okay, I mean, that's definitely a way to see it, and I can definitely go down that path with you, but... I mean, the way that they're bringing him is... It's a beautiful thing. You have a hero who, you know, won and saved the day, and then what happens after that? It's not all happily ever after... It's more humanized. It's, okay, yeah, shit happens, and we're going to let it happen to this guy. And you get to see that. You get to actually see Liu Kang as a human instead of this, oh my gosh, you're the chosen one from Mortal Kombat. No, you get to see him, you know, being someone who goes in to do, you know, after everything's set, which is her difficult friend, wants to, you know, go down and continue his life happily because Mortal Kombat's supposed to be over, and then that's taken from him. And what do you do after that when everything that you loved is taken from you and the people you thought were friends are like, no, about that. There's nothing we can do to help you.
I do think this is a more humanistic story for the character. It is a lot better than whatever video game pop culture... You know, they tried to cram down our throats with Annihilation where, you know, it's like, oh, well, we all believe in you because it's the 90s, so, you know, everything was all about positive energy, or, you know, you don't do drugs. I agree with you on that. This is a more adult Liu Kang, and it's definitely a more adult adventure. But we do... Okay, now we can go on to the second episode where we get the flashback where it is at the bar... I mean, at the diner. This is, of course, where the gangsters have killed... the fiancé, and now Liu Kang is at the Temple of Light. I'm assuming right. that's where he goes back to. He goes back to the Temple of Light.
Right.
This is a very interesting episode, and what I enjoy about this is that we don't see what Liu Kang has done to get his revenge. I don't know if we're ever going to see a flashback episode on what he did to confront the gangsters. It's never said. All we know is that he's drenched in blood... He's shaking like a leaf, and his fellow brothers at the Temple of Light know what he's done. Now, it kind of reminds me...
It kind of goes into it. He basically, you know, he alludes to what happened. He knows what he did.
Oh, I agree with you on that, but I'm just saying is that it's just disgust, and we don't see it. Oh, I agree. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Mirage comics from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where... Hamato Yoshi attacks Oroko Saki, and we don't see the murder. We just see different panels, and we see everything kind of like off-screen, and we're using our imagination to see... Today, everything would be blood and gore, but I kind of like what they're doing with the description. And what the best part is between this dialogue, everything is cut and dry. Temple of Light from what I gather, is banishing Liu Kang from the temple. They want nothing to do with him. He's pretty much broken his vows. He has lost his way. He has just killed over vengeance. And, of course, we have to get that lecture, which has been told a million times about the vicious cycle of revenge. It's not told any differently, but I like how it at least it's somewhat told. That, you know, it still spirals over and over and over again.
Right.
So it's kind of satisfactory in that way. The only thing is, of course we get the return of Shang Tsung.
Yeah.
And not only do we get the return of Shang Tsung, we get the original actor from the movie who's back as Shang Tsung.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I thought this was something out of a Quentin Tarantino movie.
It was beautiful.
He's beautiful and bald. He's bald now, but he's still intimidating. You can see it in his eyes, in his face. But my question, again, because I'm still confused about all this, is that, I guess because he's a sorcerer, he was defeated, but now he's back. And it's weird because, I don't know, does he have a respect for Liu Kang, even what happened with the tournament? Because that's why I was a little bit confused about the dialogue, because they're in a bar talking. And
they
were
in an IHOP.
No, they were in a nice restaurant.
Yeah, they were like in an IHOP.
Well, I thought it was like a sports bar. I mean, that's what it kind of came off as.
All right, we'll put him at B-Dubs.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. It definitely was an Arby's, yeah. It felt like the... It kind of felt like the Mos Eisley Cantina. Okay, I'll stop with the Star Wars references now.
I don't like you. He doesn't like you.
Who shot first? But the thing is between this is that I love how Shang Tsung sits down and he tells Liu Kang, you know, about the carbs. Like, you don't want to eat too many carbs, and Liu Kang is just cursing him off. Again, I like the fact that this is a different Liu Kang now. But I also like how this is a smarter Shang Tsung.
Yeah.
And I'm not too sure because in the original movie, he shapeshift to manipulate. Here, and I'm sure they would have the budget to do it, he's not so much shapeshifting to get inside Liu Kang's head. He's really not doing anything but telling him, the tournament's happening again, you're going to be in it, and if you're in it, you better pick a side. And he goes, okay, then I'm going to pick Earthrealm.
Right.
Now, the only thing is that, again, what is Shang Tsung's role in this? Is he going to be part of the tournament? Because, again, I don't want to jump in about episodes, but, like, if you just saw this episode for the first time, what do you think would be happening with this one? Like, do you think Shang Tsung is trying to manipulate? Do you think he's trying to go back into the tournament? Do you think he's trying to get into Liu Kang's head? Do you think that he was responsible for sending the gangsters to kill the girlfriend? What would your thoughts be on this one?
Honestly, I would think that Shang Tsung is a freaking genius, and here's why. If you're running with the canon from the first movie, because we do have him returning, if you're running with that where, you know, he's paying respect to Liu Kang while they're there, talking over some, you know, mimosas or whatever you want to have in this IHOP, because I'm still calling it an IHOP. I mean, here you have two people who have had a absolute hate grudge, who have been a part of this competition to be end-all competitions. And you have a man who is reading into it as, if I shapeshift, then that's what you're going to be expecting. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come in and I'm going to do what you're not expecting. And I'm going to approach you like a human. I'm going to pay you respect and I'm going to tell you exactly what I think. You know, not only does he compliment Liu Kang and pays respect to him, even after Liu Kang is like, you know, hey, F you buddy. He's, you know, he goes a step further with it and almost starts the mind game for him to come over from Earthrealm by saying, well, what did they do for you when this happened? So it really wouldn't surprise me if he was behind the whole gangsters coming into the diner. Because why else would you mention something like that unless you're trying to get who beat you the first time on your side? You know, what else are you going to do but come at him like, you know, like a comrade in battle rather than you know, the aggressive attack? I'm going to say, well, yeah, the first time around, you got me good, and you were doing it for a good cause, but now this time, what do you have to stand behind? You know, what are you fighting for? They've basically just, you know, they've left you to the side and abandoned you. What are you going to do now? Where's your honor?
That's what I'm thinking, too, because it's weird, and they didn't write this the way that I was hoping for, and I keep going back to the first movie, but I have a valid point on this, too. In the first movie, Shang Tsung killed Liu Kang's brother. Right. We see in that dream sequence how he's beating the crap out of Chang, and Chang is now begging for his life, and Shang Tsung just picks up the head and goes, "Your brother's soul is mine." And we can see Liu begging for his life, and then we get that, you know, unfortunately, that idiotic close-up where, you know, the face morphs into Skeletor. But yeah, then it kind of tried to make up for it in the final battle between the two, where Shang Tsung morphs into Chang again. I'm thinking that, like you said, that Shang Tsung is a lot smarter this time. He knows what he's up against with Liu Kang. And I'm sure it's going to be that Rocky II rematch that we were hoping for. Now, again, he was not a playable character in the first Mortal Kombat game. In the second Mortal Kombat game, he became a playable character. So, and we know that in the video games, they've made him bitter, he's been killed off. They've made a big thing with Liu Kang, so I was I'm surprised he didn't get his own video game, you know, like the way Sub-Zero did. So I'm thinking that's what they're going to do with this episode, but so far, the first two for this season were the most powerful, I felt.
Right. They were some of my favorites, because you had the be-all and all fan favorite. You got to see him as the adult version, as what we in real life would see, you know, no fairy tale ending aside. You got to see him what you would have expected to see with someone who's been knocked down and kicked around and beat up on so for so long, finally react to what's been done to him.
All of his feathered hair.
Yes, and he got a haircut, thank you.
But it was a good feathered haircut.
It was a beautiful, beautiful feathered haircut, but he got a haircut.
Yes.
Yeah, I got to agree, because, like, Shang coming and talking to Liu in the diner and everything. In my opinion, like, when he first met him in the tournament, Shang Tsung's been around for 1,000-plus years, fought hundreds upon hundreds of other combatants, and all taking them all down easily. And he sees this kid who comes in all cocky, and, you know, I am the chosen one.
Yeah.
You know, behind him, this and that, and the third, and he gets beaten by this kid and basically served up an extra strength dose of humble pie.
Yeah.
And instead of coming at him like, "Your soul is mine," you know, he's coming at him with respect and honor, you know, and it's like showing the old ways, but at the same time, he's being manipulative. Isn't that right? Yes. That.
Yes.
And building an army, something to, you know, shift the balance of power towards Outworld side, you know.
It's gorgeous. Very, very, very well written. Yeah.
The last thing I'm going to say about this is that this kind of reminds me of the 2003 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They had a Battle Nexus tournament, kind of like Mortal Kombat, and Michelangelo won it, and all he did was brag for, like, two seasons, up until, I think, season four, the second half of season four, about how he won this tournament. And he really didn't train, and it was talked about that he just won the tournament out of dumb luck, and, you know, that guy that he beat from another dimension wanted a rematch. And, like, he kept boasting about it, so it's like his fellow brethren didn't want to train him, not even Splinter. And then finally Leonardo said, "You know what, I'll train you." So it's an interesting, but yeah, I don't think Liu Kang has ever boasted or bragged or said anything that he's won the tournament. It's like he never walks around going like, "I'm the chosen one" or anything. And I kind of like how he does humble himself in a way. But now onto the third episode. I want to make sure I got this one right. This goes back to another ancient Japan story, correct? This is I want to make sure I got this character's name right. I wrote this down. This is Kenshi, correct? Is that how you pronounce it? Okay.
Yeah. One of our favorites.
I adore Kenshi.
This
is my favorite.
is the one where he protects the old man from being killed by the bandits about the toll, right? This is the whole, you have to pay the toll thing. And he has the half-eaten apple core, and he throws it and goes, here's my toll, and he just throws it at him.
Yeah, there's your toll.
Quick question about the old man, and I could be wrong, because he looks familiar. This is not the grandfather from Three Ninjas at all, is it?
No. If that's the same guy that was the old shopkeeper from, what was it, Big Trouble in China, then yeah.
It kind of looked like him. I don't know why. This is an interesting episode, because we don't talk too much about... We pretty much know the old school characters, but this is a new one, that as far as I know, because I'm not into anything, you know, past the original trilogy. But I have some of my notes. What are your thoughts on the character Kenshi? Because you seemed to have lit up when you heard about him.
I adore Kenshi. Kenshi's a badass.
Yeah, I mean, ever since he was introduced in the game, I always had a blast playing with him. And I was hoping that I would actually get to see a live-action version of him. And then they're just like, oh, okay, Ed wants to see this. Kendra wants to see this. Here's a badass two-parter of Kenshi.
Right.
You know, his origin all the way up to, you know, present day and everything. And it was just brilliantly done.
Now, from my notes, Kenshi came in 2002. He's part of Deadly Alliance. That's when he first came in, correct?
Yes.
Okay. From what I understand with him, he is a swordsman, he's Eurasian, and he has he has psychic connect powers. Well, yeah, I guess he's kind of
his primary ability is ESP.
Yeah.
I mean, because of the sword that he has, and his duration of time possessing it, all of his other senses have been heightened to, like, superhuman levels.
Now, I guess this would kind of sort of be a Japanese version of Daredevil, dare I say. But unlike Daredevil, Kenshi became blind because he betrayed Shang Tsung, and Shang Tsung blinded him.
Alright, so that's probably game canon, yes. Legacy, not so much. He gets it after the fight with Ermac.
Whatever it's called. He fights Ermac, and in the process of beating Ermac for the first time, he loses his ability to see. But he's the only one in centuries to ever have beaten Ermac and possessed the Shinto Blade.
Yes.
Which, if memory serves, the Shinto Blade is also a demonic blade that he has to fight to stay in control of.
Think Nightmare Soul Calibur.
What are his fatalities exactly?
My favorite is the newest one from 10, where, you know, he sets it off like a fan blade, and the body, he lifts you up telekinetically and makes you go into the blade until you're obliterated into a million little pieces. It's gorgeous.
Then there's the marionette one where he punches your ribcage out through your back, and it holds you up in the air with tendons from your arms and your legs. And then he chucks the blade at it and slices it and drops the ground all bloody and dead.
Well, I gotta ask you this question, because you got your PlayStation 4, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will be picking up one as well again.
I'm so proud of you.
Yes. Yeah. You know why? For one reason and one reason only. I don't know if you've heard this. No, Godzilla. Because they're not putting it on PlayStation 3, yeah. They're putting it on PlayStation 4, so that's why I'm getting it, because of Godzilla.
My one reason comes out June 23rd.
Yes, Batman.
Arkham Knight?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, son.
Damn straight Arkham Knight. Yeah, I will be reviewing the hell out of that one. We're going to be having a huge Batman discussion.
Hell yeah. I'll
put my name down because I'm all over that, like, flies on shit.
Well, you like cheesecake.
Well, you know, you pretty much know most of my podcasts are Batman related, so. But anyway, what did you think? Stupid question, I know. I guess this episode 3. With Kenshi gave it justice. They did not insult the intelligence of the fans for this character. any complaints about this episode? Do you think that this one gave the character justice?
The only complaint that I can give to this episode, and I know I'm probably going to get bashed for it, is... No, it wasn't that it was too short. It was perfect. It was perfectly executed, perfectly written. Kenshi was so freaking Americanized. And he wasn't an American. He was this... what's it called? He was a Ronin. He was a, a banished samurai. And there should... that's the only bad thing I have about this one, is he should have been a Japanese or an Asian-American actor. Not American, not in this one.
Right.
I have to agree with that, too. I mean, I would have appreciated a bit more Asian or Oriental aspect of the character, but just because they actually did the character justice, I let it slide.
He was pretty. He just wasn't what Kenshi was.
I like the moments where he's talking to the old man that he saved. It's very serene. I like the fact that we get to know a little bit more about these characters than just slicing everybody up. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, geeks. Want a podcast that covers a vast array of topics with no rhyme or reason? Then check out Altered Geek Unlimited, where the topics fly more or less off the cuff. We cover media news, TV, our favorite geek products, and of course, your feedback. So get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks every Friday on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Emergency. Batman speaking. Warning all of you to brace yourselves for big news.
The biggest.
Tell them, Robin.
Holy superlatives, Batman! It's really exciting.
Greetings, citizens. Join me, your old bat chum, John S. Drew, on my journey to discover what it is I love about the classic 1966 Batman television series on the Batcave podcast. Each episode, I'm joined by a guest host as we review the classic television series. There's a new episode every 2 weeks, same bat time, same bat channel on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at thebatcavepodcast.com.
Holy memoranda, folks! Make a note not to miss it.
Good thinking, Robin.
Episode 4, where the fight with Ermac.
Yeah.
Now, I've had questions about Ermac because...
He's such a badass.
My understanding of it is that originally he was supposed to be a glitch, that he was supposed to be Sub-Zero or Scorpion, and his suit became read by a glitch, and it was supposed to be an error Macross. And because this became so popular, they finally gave him his own story, and now he's just Ermac. So, now he seems to be a ninja again, with, a red suit, but now he has Psycho... Again, Psycho, I know this. Psychic kinetic powers as well. So he's kind of a sorcerer, and now he's on Shao Kahn's. He's with the Emperor. Yeah. I have never played Ermac. The only time I ever knew about him is I just saw this Red Ninja in Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And I heard stories there was this glitch that came about with the character. But now, what are your thoughts on Ermac?
Ermac is amazingly gory. Oh, he's so pretty.
He has my favorite fatality in the combat game.
Not my favorite, but Ermac is just, he was something that was probably, like you said, he was an error that got turned into this beautiful thing of absolute chaos and horror. I adore him and his story. The way that they started bringing him into the scene with Kenshi, where you started to see the spirits of all these people he's defeated and enveloped into himself. It was an amazing shot.
Well, that and the voice, too.
The voice was on par.
A thousand different people speaking.
Your legion. Many.
Loved it. You are many. I was just like...
So this has to be... He finally got his own story, I think, in the 2002 incarnation, right? He was in, what, Shaolin Monks or Deception, or which one did he come into?
I believe it was Deception.
Yeah, because Shaolin Monks was much later.
Yeah, that was just about Liu Kang and Kung.
So we pretty much have no qualms about this fight, though, between Ermac and Kenshi at all.
Yeah, early on, in the earlier games, there's no mention of any of them. And the palette swap for Ermac, like you said, was a glitch. And a lot of people spent time breaking arcade cabinets.
I thought it was just for the home consoles. I had no idea it was in the arcades as well.
Yep. Yeah. It was in the arcades. It was found first in the arcades. And during, like, Mortal Kombat 2 and 3, it was ported over to the home consoles. So everybody else can pull over that as well. Trust me, I had many hours sitting around my computer playing Mortal Kombat 2.
So I'm assuming then in the Deception video game, there is a history between these two characters. This is nothing new.
They alluded to a bit of a history, but they never expanded upon it until later games.
Yeah.
Alright, so again, we have no qualms about this episode either then.
No.
Ended beautifully.
Then, of course, we get a bizarre one. We get Kitana and Melina again. And they, of course, are ordered to fight in the tournament. Now, this is a much better story of Kitana, because unlike the first two movies, and we'll beat them, they won't happen, here she's a little bit more conflicted in her past of everything that we know from Legacy, the first one. Because we got the two-part episode about their origin. The sisters, we're assuming, are going to have to fight each other. However, they sort of kind of team up to go after Johnny Cage.
Well, they hadn't actually done the breakdown yet. Like, Kitana was still struggling within herself to figure out which side she was going to go on, and it wasn't until worlds kind of collide and everybody started to meet each other that she actually chose a side and took on Melina.
But what do you think? Like, do you think they're trying to make Kitana more Catwoman, or because it was hard to tell with her. I understand that she was conflicted, but it's not like the movies. As I said, this is kind of like, and this is not Guardians of the Galaxy. She kind of accepts the fact of what her heritage may be, or was she just brainwashed?
Just a bit more subtle than that.
All right.
The subtext with Tana is that once she meets her father and Melina kills him, that unlocks sort of her mom's soul that's still trapped inside her. Because you remember in Legacy 1, her mom drank the potion in order to transfer her soul to Tana to keep her pure. Well, that purity comes out and starts affecting her in Legacy 2, and that's why we see all the torment that she's going through. Like, oh, you know, what am I going to do when my sister's a bitch and she's got a crazy overbite?
Quit playing with your hair.
I'm too sexy for this podcast.
I'm sorry. but what he said.
We get to Melina, of course, that I guess she's also half of the creature that we know from Baraka's species. Because that's the whole thing. Now, unlike Annihilation, this character is a little bit more fleshed out, per se.
Yes.
So, at least we know now. Do you think that the tournament, now that it's starting, there's more substance and structure to it now than there were with the first two movies?
I like the way that they're leading into it a lot better than the movies. It seems like there's more of a, you know, here are the characters, let's meet them and know their stories before we get into what, you know, the fight itself and what their reasons for being there are. And it goes more in depth into that. before it throws them into the fight than it did in the movies. So that structure, yes, I adore that, because it's giving you more to feel towards those specific characters rather than here they are, let's send them to an island, let's send them into little tunnels in the earth, and then fight.
Well, I like, too, the fact that you get to see a clearly defined Earth Realm side and a clearly defined not Earth Realm side.
For the most part.
Look, here's the bad guys.
And again, for watching this episode for the first time and the way that it's discussed in the dialogue, did you feel that, again, there only could be one winner in the tournament, that eventually Melina understands that it would be sister versus sister, that we would see a bloodier Katana versus Melina fight? Or do you don't think that would be something going through her mind?
I don't even think, like, if I were a person coming in and watching this episode in particular for the first time, yes, it's leading into the tournament, and you're getting to see the sides being built between who the participants are going to be, who the Battle Royale is going to include. But I don't think that they're getting into the tournament yet, per se. Yes, Raiden started to lead into it, and he started doing his, you know, let's get 'em crew speeches, but you haven't actually gotten to the point where they're saying, you know, here are the sides, here are the, you know, yeah, the round one. You're not getting to that yet. This is just leading into it, and unfortunately, the worlds are meshing together. The guys that are brought into it, you know, Johnny Cage and Kenshi and all of the other ones that are being brought in, Stryker, they're being brought into it, and they're meeting the Outworlders. I mean, they're bound to meet each other, and you're just kind of getting icing on the cake fights instead of, okay, we're at the tournament.
Well, something, too, that Raiden said when they're having their around the campfire powwow, he's like, it's not about who wins, it's about surviving.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of looking at it from the aspect that if it, in the Legacy series, that it's not who wins the tournament, it's who has the most people left alive at the end of the tournament.
Look at all my toys.
Yeah, I mean, if Earthrealm has five guys and, you know, Outworld has like four guys, and Earthrealm takes the scrap.
Right.
At least that's what I'm thinking. I don't know. Maybe they'll blow us away in the next one and they're like, oh wait, Kung Lao's gonna kick the shit out of Johnny Cage, which I am completely okay with.
Yeah, there aren't any brackets per se, but you can tell that this is gonna be a deadwood tournament. And
right.
We get to six, of course, where we get how Johnny Cage was recruited by Raiden, which I have to say, this is not the Raiden that we knew. Well, this is kind of like, I'm not going to go into the movies again, because I'm not going to go into that Christopher Lambert fight anymore. I'm not even touching that with a 10-foot pole. Right? Yeah, I know I'm going to lose. But this Raiden is a little bit more soft-spoken. I mean, listen. In Legacy, he was sedated, he was a mental institution. Johnny Cage, again, is in jail because of, you know, God knows what, beating the shit out of everybody. Because, you know, he's a has-been or whatever.
I'm Johnny Cage, and I'm pissed.
But this is kind of like an interesting, it's in the World Wrestling Federation, a triple threat match.
Wow.
Well, we do. We have the two sisters versus Johnny Cage.
Technically, that's a handicap match.
Yeah.
Well, it started off as a handicap match, and then it kind of became like a triple threat, because Melina doesn't know which side she wants to go on, as we said before.
Yeah.
Well, Katana.
Melina wants to kill people.
Yep.
Well, Melina just wants to chomp people's faces off. Yeah, that's definitely...
Mom on your face.
Well... It's kind of like the penguin.
Yeah.
It could be worse. My nose could be gushing blood. But we get an interesting reference. And we get a reference, I guess, from the first movie where, again, his $500 sunglasses have been broken. And, again, we get... Now, I'm assuming Melina is dead. Because Katana, of course... Because Katana comes in and pretty much saves Johnny Cage's ass. I mean, Johnny Cage, I have problems with this one. Did he come off a little bit more cowardly this time?
He'll never get ahead in the world.
No. He does get his ass beat, though. Goodness gracious, like, Melina just takes him down. But in all fairness, before Katana saves him, Katana saves him, and then he retaliates and saves her from Melina.
He stabs her in the foot while she's distracted as all hell.
Yeah.
Ooh, I saved the day! And then I ran like a bitch.
You broke my sunglasses, bitch.
Yeah, it's not like, these are $500 sunglasses, asshole. This is like, oh, you broke my sunglasses, bitch. And just like, he takes off, and Katana's kind of wondering what she did, if she did the right thing.
Right.
By killing Melina. I have reservations about the last couple minutes of this episode, because I'm on team Katana, don't get me wrong. But out of everything that we saw what Johnny Cage can do, I'm just tired that they still don't know what to do with the character. If he's supposed to be based on Jean-Claude Van Damme, or if he's supposed to like play this game and put up or shut up. He did a lot of that in Legacy 1. Here, he's just taking off like a little bitch. And that's the problem that I have with it.
Yeah, they served him up some bitch pie in Legacy 2. I gotta give it up on that. He doesn't really put up a fight with anybody. His biggest standout moment is stabbing Melina in the foot with her own side blade.
I mean, looking at the episode, it's more Katana... I mean, for me at least, it's more Katana-based, and I'm more happy with seeing her finally take that step rather than thinking about it or watching her contemplate it and actually acting on what she feels is right. And then, you know, contemplating whether it was or not, but actually making a movement. I mean, this one was more for me a Katana episode than it was Johnny Cage. It was a closure or an opening, I guess, for her to continue on with how her character is going to be.
Well, I think this, you know, has to make up for what they did with Katana in the past. So I'm on Team Katana. I'm not on Team Cage. Because he pretty much had to be saved by Katana, which is kind of sad. So he's... yeah, so Cage got caged. Yeah.
Yes.
Nice utility vest, Batman.
Yeah.
They could bring him back in 3 and actually do something with him, but it almost felt... I mean, that's probably the one failure that I see happening in Legacy 2 in the entirety of that season of it, is that it doesn't feel like there was as much love for Johnny Cage as there was in the first opening.
I don't think there's been love for Johnny Cage since the first Mortal Kombat movie. I don't think they know... I think this is just because Jean-Claude Van Damme felt that he was too good to be part of a video game, and Ed Boon has been trying to make Jean-Claude Van Damme look like an idiot ever since, because that's who Johnny Cage is supposed to be based on. That's pretty much it. So I think that's why they're always making Johnny Cage in this arrogant little bitch, and that's what that's the problem. People don't really get that reference because people don't remember who Jean-Claude Van Damme is anymore.
Well, that's because Jean-Claude Van Damme made himself look like a bitch.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. Is he in Expendables? I don't even remember.
He was in the third one, wasn't he?
Second one.
Oh, okay. Well,
played a bad guy. Nobody cared.
I have to go back and watch Sudden Death because I would give him one movie and that would be it.
Wasn't he in Double Team?
Yeah.
Maybe
Time
I
Cop.
I like Double Team.
Yeah, Time Cop maybe, but that would be it. Well, Episode 8, again, we get more Scorpion Sub-Zero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is another interesting one because it does go back to the first season of Legacy, where we got, like, it was mostly Scorpion Sub-Zero, which is something I'm not getting sick of because, of course, again, it makes up for what they did for the first two movies. But here we, of course, have, we know what happened with Season 1. We know with Quan Chi, because he's pretty much the one who manipulated and made sure that these two Hatfields and McCoys were going to fight. Now they're fighting in the tournament. Here was something that was interesting, though. Scorpion is a specter, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So we pretty much know that Scorpion can never rest until he has his revenge.
You may want to pause it, Jeremy.
Sure.
The rest of roommates just got back home. So.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. They just started, like... coming in, and it was really loud, so I was like, that's a whole lot of rustling plastic.
Okay, so we pretty much know that Scorpion is a specter, and he can't rest until he has his revenge. 3D? 3D? Okay, so...
I can't do that. It hurts my fingers.
Okay, so anyway, the point is that we get, I guess, a finality between Sub-Zero and Scorpion. That Scorpion has killed Sub-Zero for his revenge, but Sub-Zero's last words are supposedly, "I was not responsible for killing your family." My question is that does the cycle of revenge and death continue between these two then?
Oh, it will.
Well, of course.
Because you've still got Sub-Zero who's got to come back. So yes, he's going to come back.
So
but this one rewarded all of the fans of the game because you got Scorpion's fatality. Yeah, you got Sub-Zero's. Forgive me. You got Sub-Zero's freaking fatality done on himself. Skull ripped through. It's beautiful.
So,
absolutely beautiful.
So we pretty much, yeah, that's the thing that I like too, is that Scorpion is the one who's doing Sub-Zero's fatality to Sub-Zero. Which is kind of ironic.
There was no bucket of water.
No. I like to pretend the bucket of water never existed.
That conveniently placed bucket.
By Raiden, no less.
Right?
Who would not participate in the tournament, and yet he put the bucket of water down. But whatever.
Well, if you get Kitana, the element of life will kill him.
Yeah. Of course, I never did that in the video game, but what the fuck do we know?
Mitch, I hit down and then a punch, and I punched him off the bridge. Spikes and shit died. Is that the element of life? Oh, wait, he fell through air. There you go. The element of life killed him. No, it was the sudden stop at the bottom of the pit on some fucking spikes that killed him.
For argument's sake, if this was finality between Sub-Zero and Scorpion, do you think that this is probably the best finality they can have between these two characters right now? For the moment.
For the moment, yes.
Do you think anything could top what they're going to do if they bring him back in Season 3?
I say bring it. I mean, I'm going to keep a completely open mind and see what they can do, because they really haven't dropped the ball so far.
So no jumping the shark then with these two?
I'm not going to jump the shark yet, no.
No.
Okay. We have the 9th episode. This is how Liu Kang was recruited into the tournament.
Yeah.
He's a hitman for Russian mobsters.
Actually, he's just a hitman for hire. It doesn't matter who he works for. In his opinion, the only reason why he's doing it is to take out scum.
Yeah.
So he's basically Frank Castle in this.
Punisher.
Yeah, he's the Punisher son.
Yeah. I'm the Oriental son of the Punisher.
Yes, Punisher.
Do you like how he's being fleshed out with this, where he's the hitman, where they make him the Punisher?
I kind of dig it. I mean, I was never really... like, yay, Liu Kang. And then Legacy 2 comes along and they're like, hey, he's darker and all this other jazz. And I'm like, hi, Liu Kang.
Hey, you gotta understand, though, with the games, I mean, anyone who's ever played a Mortal Kombat game or even just watched the video or the movie, Liu Kang was a joke. I mean, he was literally the butt of the jokes for the longest time. And then this started to come out, and at least in my opinion, you know, this gave you a new adult, more accessible Liu Kang, a more badass, where, you know, people were like, oh, okay, so that's Liu Kang? Okay. Rather than, you know, what he just did, the bicycle kick, and...
He sounds like a goddamn Ewok.
Yeah. A character... I still have not been able to do that move in the game, so... Yeah, that flying bicycle kick. I don't know if I want to see any more of his flashbacks, though. I mean, I pretty much get to how he's bitter and angry and he's torn. I felt like the first and second episode opened and closed what he was like in his past, now that he's Americanized or that he's humbled or whatever he's doing since he won the tournament. Do you want to see any more of these episodes, what he was like before he was back in the second tournament?
No.
I actually wouldn't mind seeing. I mean, his answer is no, but mine, I wouldn't mind if in 3... there's maybe a flashback of what happened in between, you know, what happened at, you know, the House of Light and his last encounter with Kung Lao to the bar sequence. I wouldn't mind seeing a couple flashbacks of how he got from A to B, even though it is alluded to, and I mean, you basically get to create your own destiny with Liu Kang.
What do I think of this?
I'm not really interested in any more flashbacks for it. I just want to see it move forward. I mean, is he going to redeem himself, or is he going to fall to the wayside as an outworld?
That would be the episode I would be fine with flashbacks in. Would be where it's come down to the final wire, where he's got to choose a side between Outworld and Earthrealm, and that's what's going to go through his head, or the pros and the cons of being who he is, all the good and all the bad, all at once.
Yeah.
The only flashbacks I'm kind of curious now about the good and the bad would be Sub-Zero and Scorpion. Those are the ones I always seem to root for. I'm not tired of their flashbacks. I am impressed what they're trying to do with Liu Kang. Really, I am, but I don't know. I just can't get into this character no matter what they try to do to him, and I kind of feel bad, but I'm still with Sub-Zero and Scorpion, but I'm not done with them quite yet. If I had to pick two characters of the stories, them, and if not, Cyrax and Smoke and Sektor, but maybe a little bit more Melina and Katana, but and even maybe something with Raiden. But Liu Kang, to me, it's not because he doesn't have the more interesting moves or the fatalities or the animalities or anything. I don't know. There's just something about him that he just doesn't interest me as much. It's just like that one character, and I don't, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, we all have that person, though.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody who never played this game, you know, you had your favorites. You had the ones that you were always choosing to go into battle with. You learned every move that you possibly could so that you could create that flawless freaking flow combo sequence. And then there were those where you're like, yeah, I'm not touching that with a 30-foot pole. Mine was Sonya Blade. I can't stand that character. I like her with Legacy, but I really don't like her. I never used her, never fought with her.
The only times I fought with Sonya is when I had to. And that was like in the New World Combat when you played the story mode.
I've only used Sonya for the Super Nintendo because I was able to do the fatalities for the first Mortal Kombat game. Other than that, though, I don't really care. When I saw that she and Kano were background characters, that was pretty much it.
Right.
But now we get to the Season 2 finale. Do you think this is a much better one from The Last Legacy because there is a huge cliffhanger and there are higher stakes? It's pretty much coming down to Liu Kang and Kung Lao fighting. We knew they were going to be part of the tournament. It's nothing new for the video game because it's not like they haven't fought like Kung Lao, and we haven't seen fatalities between these two fight before anyway. We know one's right. Going to have to kill the other if this is a tournament. My idiotic question has always come down to has been this. If this is Earthrealm versus Outworld, why is it that we're seeing Earthrealm versus Earthrealm? Shouldn't it be one side Earthrealm and one side Outworld?
But that's the huge cliffhanger, though. Here you have Kung Lao on one side of things, where he's made his stand crystal pristine clear. And then you have, you have Liu Kang, who hasn't actually made a definitive statement on which side he's actually going to fight for. And out of nowhere, here he comes, and he's taking on the Earthrealm, which that's kind of the cliffhanger for me is he Earthrealm, or is he going to go ahead and choose the side of Shang Tsung and do Outworld?
So, again, I know I don't want to put in the Star Wars reference, but we might as well. Do you think that Shao Kung and Shang Tsung are trying to act all Emperor Palpatine for Liu Kang?
I think that they're playing the game the way that they're wanting to. They're making it to where they manipulate on the chessboard the way that they want that game to go. And for the right there and then, on this cliffhanger, Liu Kang is doing what he needs to do. He's in the position where, as a pawn, he needs to be.
So we don't...
Whether he's a pawn or not, but...
Pretty much we have not seen who's advancing in the tournament or who isn't. I don't know who's really where these two stand, because, again, we don't see the brackets. So we're not too sure where Kung Lao is in the tournament, and Liu Kang we pretty much know from previous, but we don't know where he is right now.
Right. That's the thing, too. It's still, Sean decided he could actually talk now. And he brought up the point that we brought up earlier. I mean, and we all mutually agreed on it, is that this is not actually laid out as a tournament at this point in the game. Or in the show. Whichever way, whatever analogy you want to use. It's not laid out as a tournament just yet. It's just, there you are, let's go. You know, round one, ding, ding, fight. I want you, you're there, let's go.
It ends on an interesting cliffhanger, though, where these two are, where Kung Lao and Liu Kang are face-to-face in the circle in the middle of nowhere, and we can hear the words fight echoing in the background like classic Mortal Kombat. I didn't think this was cheesy at all, and it goes right to black because these are only 12-minute episodes.
Right.
You could tell that both of them were surprised that they were going to be in the tournament together, though they kind of knew that this was going to happen. What are your predictions between... Because I guess this will be a Season 3 opener. What are your predictions between Liu Kang versus Kung Lao?
My prediction is it's not going to get resolved until the end of Season 3.
Yeah.
But just for fan service, I want to see Kung Lao beat him with his...
His wicker hat or something. And have the weighted hat like he's supposed to. I don't think there's going to be a definitive winner when they come back, though. I mean, I'm sure that they're going to go all out and actually give people what they're wanting to see, which is the two actually go headlong into a fight. There's going to be a great action sequence, but I don't think that there's going to be a conclusion at that point when this one comes back.
What would your predictions for Season 3 be exactly? Who do you think may come back in? Who may not come back in? Do you think we'll have Baraka in the tournament?
I don't have Baraka.
What do you think he'll be in Season 3, though, in the fight, in the tournament?
Well, I mean, think about who's not there yet. We haven't seen Goro. We haven't seen Baraka fully come out and do his thing. We haven't seen... Shut up. We haven't seen Shiba yet. We haven't seen a lot of the people that are there. And
yeah, because the Saber Initiative hasn't come back into play since Season 1. So that's bound to come back into play again. We haven't seen Jax or Sonya show back up. So they're bound to show back up in there somewhere. And she needs to come back and just do some slicing dicey on everybody and be done with everything.
Which character would you like to see have a flashback? For me, I'd like to see Reptile.
Honestly, for me, it's not really a flashback for me, but I would like to see the story of Rain come into play, or Smoke.
Rain's tied more to Shao Kahn.
I would like to see them come into play.
Do you think from the first two movies that if a character had a chance to be rebooted and given justice, someone like Jade, do you think that Jade or Nightwolf will work a lot better in Legacy?
Nightwolf would be amazing if they, like as you said, rebooted him for the season. They're in need of an overhaul to come back and help some reporters.
I agree with that. I'd be fine with Jade coming back.
What about Montoro?
That's your dude.
Eh, I'm not into him.
Yeah, look at that smile. That's your dude. That ain't my dude.
Yeah, I'm good on... I don't need Mataro or Kintaro or... Well, Kintaro was...
But you would like to see if Goro comes into this, though.
I would.
I wouldn't mind it. I'd like to see some Shao Kahn eventually, too.
I'd like to see Goro.
I want to see some Quan Chi.
Yeah.
Quan Chi needs his time in the spotlight. Because that motherfucker is badass.
It would almost be cool, though, if they would also try and streamline some of the characters that they've got in the newer game in there as well. Because some of the newer characters they've got on the game are freaking ridiculous.
Ferator,
or whatever.
Ferator, and Fora, Cicada, and all them.
Kotal Kahn.
Yeah, I have to agree. I would like to see more of the classic characters that we played in the original video games, and these new ones that, you know, Ferator, I guess. That's something like Beyond Thunderdome for me, which is okay, but that works on Beyond Thunderdome, but doesn't work here.
Kotal Kahn until Shao Kahn's out of the way, because he basically is
he's the one who took over.
Yeah. I would love to see some Shinnok.
Yeah.
I would totally love to see some Shinnok.
And Shinnok, of course, is the father of Shao Kahn.
Yeah, and he's the one been pulling the strings since day one, basically.
Do you think they would expand the time for the episodes and make them a little bit bigger and longer?
I don't know. I mean, I would think that, honestly, I would be okay with them doing that maybe for the finales to give a little bit more, but I'm still perfectly fine with the 12 to 13 minute ones.
Yeah, I mean, if it needs it, go for it. But if not, don't worry. Don't worry about it, because the length of time that they've been spending has been pretty much on the mark for everything. I mean, some episodes are 4 minutes. Some of the episodes are 18 minutes. I'm completely okay with that, because it's nice bite-sized chunks of epicness.
Well, I am definitely impressed, but we're not done yet, because next week we're going to start to do bits and pieces, and by that, these are 22 episodes, if I'm not too mistaken. So we are going to break them up into parts, because these are 44-minute episodes apiece. But we are going to be covering Conquest next week.
Yay!
And then eventually we are going to have to cover Street Fighter, because it kind of sort of has something to do with Mortal Kombat. I know, this is going to be a fun one, too. But that's the joy of this podcast. It's a grab bag.
Now, are we doing, when we say Street Fighter, are we doing the movie, Assassin's, or are we doing Assassin's Fist?
We're going to do...
both.
Yeah. Yes, don't worry. I'd like to see if that has somewhat of justice. Not to mention the fact the free comic book day I got the comic books, so I'm kind of curious what they do. Yes, what a haul. Which, by the way, I might add, I have two interviews that will be up by before Memorial Day weekend. Your friend, LaShawn Colvin, which was a great interview. You're going to love what she had to say. That was an hour-long podcast and then some. I was very impressed. And the written will be up sometime next week as well. Of course, I also got the creators of Freeloader. And, of course, let's not forget Until We Sleep, Bob Gard.
Yes,
and I'm going to be talking to him soonish as well. Folks, you know the drill. Find us over at GeekCastRadio.com. Partnered Twitter at Hunnic Outcast. Kendra Hale, of course. All Hail Studios, you and your husband, Edward. Kendra, Inks of Kendra. And, of course, you know where to find us. Facebook, Hunnic Outcast. We're everywhere, man. We're just, like, plastering. You know, kind of like Ant-Man, how he has those little tooth... Yeah, we're going to be... By the way, another great announcement I have for us. Not only did I put together the business cards and I handed them out at WizardCon and I got some 20-somewhat interviews piled up, but you're going to love this as well. We have an ad that will be out of Too Many Games in Pennsylvania. So we're getting there. And of course, we have another great 5-star review. So thank you again. Yes. So until then, folks, we'll talk to you next week. But in the meantime, your soul is mine.
I command the jawbridge. Open!
Yes, that's right. We have traveled to Eternia to enter Castle Grayskull. Join Optimus Solo and TF Joe and Mike as they find themselves telling Tales of Eternia. We cover all things He-Man in this 45-episode-long podcast. You can find us on iTunes and www.geekassradio.com. By the power of Grayskull, we all have the power.
Remote Control is the new TV podcast from the GeekCast Radio Network. We'll be covering TV shows and topics from the year 2000 to whenever now is. We'll have special themed episodes entitled Pilot and Season Premieres, as well as finishing finales. We'll also have Season Pass episodes, where we take a look at an entire season of a TV show. Remote Control can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and www.geekcastradio.com. So tune in, because we are all remote controlled.